Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Alex Avila with Love University. I'm a clinical psychologist, author, and speaker. And Love University talks about helping you achieve your highest level of success, love, and happiness, loving yourself, others, and a higher nature. And every week, we tackle different topics on self-esteem, relationships, and love, not just as a romantic sense, but also as a powerful force for good in many different ways. Now, today, I'm very happy to have an interesting guest, whose name is Amberly, Coach Amberly. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Now, you have a very interesting website. You talk about marriage, and I believe you're a marriage counselor, coach, and help couples, I guess, have great marriages. And you describe yourself as Amberlita Esposita. So you sound like you're Latina. I thought you were Latina, but are you Latina or Hispanic?
No, I'm not.
Okay, where did you get those funny Latino names in your description?
Yeah, they're just my husband's nicknames for me. He was in Mexico for 2 years serving a church mission, and so he speaks Spanish fluently, and
beautiful.
It's just his little Spanish.
Okay, yeah, because we have a pretty big Latino audience, and we also do a podcast in Spanish, so maybe someday we'll have him on in Spanish.
We can
talk about that. Now, you describe yourself as a 20-something-year-old woman who refuses to grow up, and you have a bachelor's degree in family studies, and you want to help have great relationships. Now, why don't you want to grow up, Amberly?
Why don't I want to grow up? I just think it's fun always staying young and finding fun in life and always playing and finding the fun in life, letting it get boring. And
yes, exactly. So I talk a lot about spontaneity in my new book I'm working on, Invincible You, how, as children, we are very spontaneous and even animals. But then as adults, we become very stuck in a regimen. You know, we go to the same places. Entertainment becomes watching television or doing something like that. So we need to recapture that spontaneity. How do you do that in marriage? Because sometimes marriages can get stale and they seem kind of boring for some people. How do you keep that spontaneity alive?
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's easy to get in those routines in marriage and everything like that. And we just try to find little things that we can do, even just changing up our normal date night or normal every night activities, just trying to be more spontaneous in that. So, like you mentioned, entertainment becomes watching TV or get caught in that same, these are our shows, this is what we watch. Even something as simple as finding something new that neither of you has watched before and exploring that together. Or I've seen some couples, for example, you watch like a reality TV show, like maybe The Great British Bake Off is a favorite of everyone's right now. They've done that, and for a date night, not only do they watch that, they have taken it and found those recipes and for a date night done a Great British Bake Off themselves and had like their kids judge them or something like that.
Oh, okay. I didn't know British people had good food. I don't want to insult them, but
I guess. Yeah, I don't know. I've never tasted it, but it's
okay.
I guess a lot of people watch.
They can have that. Now, let's say, Amberly, we put away the TV. Is there anything we can do, I don't know, in the backyard or in the park or any fun things we can do, like little spontaneous things for a married couple?
Yeah, for sure. One of mine and my husband's, something we did that was spontaneous, a year or two ago, we loved to go on like long late night walks at night. And we can't do that as much because we have two little kids and they're obviously asleep in bed. And we can't have a babysitter come sit with them every night for us to go on a walk. So we've started finding little ways that we can keep that connection and do something different each night. And so one of the things that we've done is we have what we call our rooftop rendezvous, and we climb out our bedroom window and sit on a rooftop together.
Wow.
And we'll just drink hot chocolate or have a dessert, watch the stars, just talk.
That sounds very romantic. Like that. So a rooftop chat. In the Latin community, they have a serenata where the mariachis come and sing to the lady, you know, and the guys downstairs.
So yeah, that'd be great.
That's kind of when they're courting. And I think you call these, you have a nice term, you call these date moments, or I could even say micro dates, like little things. And you said you're a firm believer in having these small moments of connection when the kids are in bed and all that. And why is that so important to have these date moments?
I think it's important because when you're dating your spouse, you guys are constantly looking for ways. Well, before you were married, you're constantly looking for ways to connect, like all those little things that you can do together and looking for ways to make everything special and to continue to court each other. And so those date moments and those, well, I call them mini dates, and I like your term as well. they're just a fun way to keep that connection going. You may have your date night every single week, but that can start to become routine. And so I'm just a believer in looking for little ways to date each other throughout the week. And in addition to that, and whether it's going to lunch together or enjoying dessert together or putting a puzzle together at the end of the day, just little things like that that get you out of your routine and give you that opportunity to connect and have, like you said, that spontaneity.
That sounds great. Okay, you mentioned also stargazing and even a warm bath in a soaking tub. So you better have a big enough bath, right? You know, to fit you guys.
Yeah. Otherwise, yeah, for sure.
It'd be tricky. So it's basically a lot of romance you're putting in back into the marriage, you're saying. So I wonder why, you know, we hear the term empty marriage, where people are still married, you know, committed legally, but they don't have sex anymore. They're not emotionally connected. Yet they stay married. Why do you think that is? Why are there so many empty marriages in the U.S.? Because we know there are at least 50% of marriages end in divorce, but then a lot of marriages are still together, but they're empty marriages. What do you think is going on, Amberly?
So I think a lot of it, my website, A Prioritize, is focused on making your marriage a priority every single day so that you can continue to be that connected couple. And I think a lot of it is that we just fall into these routines. We stop being spontaneous. We become more like roommates because our everyday life responsibilities take over and we don't make that effort, even that small effort, we think it seems too big, to connect on a daily basis. And so I think for a lot of couples, they've become that roommates, but it's a comfortable thing for them. That relationship is comfortable. It's not something that they want to change. A lot of people are still in it for their kids, if they're done with the marriage, things like that. But I think a lot of being too comfortable with where you're at and it becoming too much of a routine. Mm-hmm. And it's comfortable, but it's not fulfilling.
Hmm. Yeah, I like that term, prioritize marriage. Priority is a big word. Now, you know, we prioritize our work, right? You know, we put 8 to 10 hours or 12 hours a day in our work. We might work on our car. We might work out, you know, several hours a week. But how much time do we actually spend on our marriages? Probably not very much, right? You know, in terms of the same amount of effort and time. And I think that's what you're saying, that, you know, we need to do that more. And, you know, we have a lot of listeners that are both male and female. And sometimes the females complain that, you know, the males don't want to work on the marriage. You know, they're the ones, the females are the ones, ladies are the ones who go to therapy and they read the self-help books. So what do you say to the guys out there? Why should they work on the marriage when the woman's going to do it anyways?
Yeah, I think it's got to be a double effort, you know. If you're going to go to therapy, you both need to be in it together and be willing to work on it. And just in terms of making a priority, I think the hard part is our expectations, just as different people in general, and maybe male and female in general as well, our expectations are different. The way that we do things is different, are different. And I think just being able to recognize that, but also being willing to come to that place with your spouse. So if a wife is asking her husband, hey, let's go to therapy, let's work on our marriage, or let's go on this date marriage, for him to be willing to invest that as well and not just be dragged along just because he wants to, you know, please his wife or make his wife happy, to actually invest in it and make that a priority for himself as well, and put the effort into it that needs to be given.
Okay, great. But the problem is, though, you know, some men are practical, you know, some are more emotional or logical, and they want to know, like, you know, what is the benefit I'm going to get? You know, why should I invest so much in this marriage or in this relationship in terms of going to therapy or something like that? I mean, I'm a good guy, you know, I make a good living, I'm kind to my wife, but why do I have to put more effort into it? What would you say to those men? What's the advantage for them or benefit for putting more effort into the marriage?
Yeah, so there's a bunch of studies out there that show how marriage can affect you, and it's all scientifically based, how it affects your health, how it affects your happiness, how it affects your longevity life, all those kinds of things. So I think for those people, that's something that they could look into, like, what is this going to do for me, and find what it means to them personally, what motivates them personally, what's the benefit to them personally. And like you said, it's different for everyone.
So the wife could say, honey, here's a bunch of research articles, you're going to live longer, you're going to have fewer heart attacks, less cancer, and fewer car accidents if you treat me good, right? So something like that. And then, and that's all, it's all true. You know, you have better psychological, emotional health, especially for males when they have a strong marriage. It helps your immune system in many different aspects, and also the emotional support. You know, making love with your spouse, spending time with her. And she's more open to that, you know, when you put energy into the relationship, as opposed to just letting it go. Now, I know you mentioned you have a religious background. You're a member of a church. Some of our listeners are religious and some are not. What's your advice to those who are religious, first of all, in terms of marriage?
In terms of marriage, if you guys are both religious, I think for most people, if they are religious, they and their spouse have the same beliefs, the same core beliefs. Some people are a little bit different in their religious beliefs. And I've seen a lot of couples who are, each of them are a little bit different. But I think just for marriage, making that a priority as well. And I think that can be a huge benefit to couples to find that, to worship together, to pray together, to read scriptures together, to attend church services together. That can be a great thing as well. And it can be a great foundation for a marriage relationship.
Okay. Because I think the term is equally yoked in the religious sense that, you know, they have similar spiritual values. And that apparently is an important thing for people to consider. You know, they both have, you know, a certain level of faith in whatever they believe in. And then also we talk about being psychologically yoked. I talk about this idea of, you know, compatibility, you know, based on personality types. I've written books like Guy Types and Love Types, which talks about, you know, the different personality types and compatibility. And that's also very important too. So let's say, Amber, that you are married to someone who's really maybe not your ideal compatible type psychologically, and you work it out, but it's kind of hard. Should you divorce, or do you think there's still a way to make it work?
I honestly believe that if you are willing to make that work and if you want to make that work, that you can. We all have our differences and we all have things that we believe in differently, things that we do differently. And I found that rather than just like, you know, we're different, we're just going to live with that or we're not going to live with it, to find ways that those differences make you the best team and embrace that and accept it and make it work best for you. So recognize that you have those differences and find a way to make to help make those make you that best team, that together you're going to be better than you would be apart or maybe with someone that's similar, that has an exact same similar personality type, psychological type, all that as you.
Yeah, I like that. So basically, I like the term team, you know, being a team, working together to create something positive. I say to create light in the world, you know, create something where it's through your children or through your work or just, you know, being good-hearted people, you're creating loving energy and you're spreading it out to others. And that's a good mission for, I think, a married couple. They can maintain that more than just procreation or more than just, you know, having convenience. It's, you know, they have a mission. You know, they have something they want to do beyond themselves. And the other thing you talk about, Amberly, is rituals and traditions. And I think you mentioned, and then some people might say, well, this is kind of old-fashioned. People don't do this anymore, especially in Western America, which, you know, we're in the U.S. Things like, you know, the family dinners and bedtime with children. Do people still do this in America or other countries, do you think, Kimberly?
I do, for sure. I've talked to lots of people that do things like that. And there are some families that it doesn't work for them. But I know a lot of people that do bedtime rituals, have dinner rituals. My husband's recently been working longer hours, and so dinner hasn't been something that we can do as often as a whole entire family, but we find other things that are rituals as well. And I think it's more important, not necessarily what the ritual is, that everyone's having a dinner ritual or everyone has a bedtime ritual or something like that, but that you find a ritual that works for your family and that serves your family's needs and that helps connect your family and you as a couple at that specific stage in your life.
Okay, now you even mentioned cleaning parties. Now, I'm not a great cleaner, but is that fun to clean up?
For me, it is. My husband and I did this sometimes. We'd have cleaning parties together. We just, when our house just gets chaotic, we both were working full time. I was a student. We have two little kids. We have side businesses. And so sometimes, you know, we give up a clean house for that family connection or going on date night or something. And so sometimes it gets to the point where we're like, let's just clean together. And there, I don't know, there's something so satisfying about accomplishing that. It's just something little, but
yeah, that's a whole different idea.
We just work together to get house clean.
Now let me ask Reggie, our engineer. Reggie, would you like to have a cleaning party in your house?
I guess.
So how do you, would you put balloons up and like play a little music? Stuff and just how would you do it?
So what we do, we usually like grab dinner and then we send the kids to grandma's house for a couple hours, and we turn on our favorite Pandora. So we turn on 90s pop. That's like our
what's some of your favorite songs from the 90s or artists?
Oh, I don't know. There's so many, so many good ones. I can't even pick one off the top of my head. They always pop on and we're like, oh yeah, this one. We didn't remember that one.
Hootie and the Blowfish, for example?
Yeah, sure. That's some of them that pop up. So it's always fun. It just kind of brings that, you know, we talk about it. We reminisce on the music. Oh, this is one we used to dance to all the time in high school or stuff like that. So
the songs that bring back those little memories, right? The, you know, you're driving somewhere and the first kiss or something like that. And you heard that song.
Yeah, for sure.
So you have a, I like that. So it's a, in psychology, we call it the like association cues, like something that triggers a memory. So something positive. And also, Amberly, you even mentioned date night with kids. Now, how does that work? Because we think of date nights as just a couple, but how do you do it with the kids?
Yeah, for sure. Family dates are something that we've really come to love. It's something really fun. We still believe in those date night with just a couple, that we need that couple time. We need that alone time. We need that together time, not having to focus on the kids. But those family dates can be a lot of fun. So what we do a lot of times, the weeks when we don't have a babysitter coming, we'll go out and do something fun as a family. We'll go to dinner. We'll go to the park. We'll go do a fun activity. And then after the kids are in bed, we'll continue our date night and do something else. But those family dates, I think it allows us all also to see our spouse in a different light, not just see them just with us, but watching them with the kids and getting that time to connect with the kids. Mm-hmm. And it makes a difference for the kids as well. So,
what city do you live in, Amberly?
I live in Farmington, Utah.
Okay. What stuff is out there? Are there any amusement parks or stuff that you can do with the kids? Fun things out there?
Yeah. We've got like a little amusement park that's just a couple blocks away from us. We haven't gone with our kids yet. They're just getting to the age where they would think that was fun. We do dinner. There's like fairs that we go to. They have baby animal days. We love like the, like at Christmas time, we go see all the lights. We'll go ice skating. We'll go... during the fall, they have like fall festivals and you can see the animals and do corn mazes and all that kind of stuff.
Sounds like a lot of fun. Out here in LA, we're stuck in concrete and traffic and we have to drive an hour to get somewhere. But, you know, there's a lot of fun things here too. But I think what you're trying to say is be creative, you know, be creative and imaginative, you know, and include your family in some of these activities. But at the same time, I think you want to have the couple, right, to have their own time. Because sometimes the kids... can be, you know, they're all the time, right? So you want to kind of get your own special time. And I believe you wrote a book even, something called Date Nights or something like that, that's on your website.
Yeah, I have an ebook. It's called Prioritizing Date Night. And it has over 200 ideas. I've shared all my like tips and tricks for making date night happen, whether it's date night out without the kids or a date night at home after the kids are in bed, things like that. And I've got over 200 ideas. Of fun things that you can do, and just little ways to spice up that date night. That's something different than dinner and a movie or your regular board game night or whatever you normally do. It's to help you get out of that box. And there's simple things, there's extravagant things, but just something to get those creative juices flowing, like you said, and find something creative to do that brings back, again, like you talked about in the beginning, that spontaneity and helps you find that connection and that romance and the excitement in your marriage again.
It's kind of fun. You know, for my clients, I sometimes suggest theater games or improv. It's called improv. Where they like create a story out of words. So like a person says a word and then someone says another word and they create a little story from it. You know, something like fun, you know, kind of a fun exercise game. Now, in your book, I think in your description, you say that the date night can apply to a lot of different kind of people. You know, young and married may feel the honeymoon is over and the spark is fading. Then you have the new parents who have the kids and they take a lot of time and energy. You have, I guess, older parents of older children who have busy schedules. And they call them the empty nesters. Those are the children already left the house. So give us some tips. I mean, we're all excited. Reggie, are you excited about this? Okay. Reggie's still single, right? But you want to get married someday?
Yeah.
Okay. So if you got married, what would you want to do with your wife for fun?
For fun? Well, I mean, go to movies, shows, concerts.
Okay, but let's do something more fun than that. Think of something. Can you help him? Can you help poor Reggie? You know, he's been married now for 10 years in the future. And he wants to do something really fun with a lot of expense, you know. What do you suggest for him?
So a few ideas. If he wants to stick to the movie thing he loves, we've loved going to drive-in movies. days. At home, we create our own little movie. We'll do it in the backyard with like a laptop, or if you've got a projector, you can put it on the side of the house, something like that.
That's cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Something fun that we've done recently, we started trying new places in town. So you have like the same, like five restaurants that you love or things that you know you love. So we've started just driving around. Oh, we've never heard of that restaurant before. And we'll just pick that restaurant and go to that restaurant. And it's just, those are my, like, I mean, there's big ideas. We've done like indoor campouts during the winter. So we've, you know, we've got our tent, we've got the air mattress, we do s'mores in the oven. We do all sorts of things. We do tinfoil dinners. So
that's great. Tons of ideas. So what do you think, Reggie? So your wife blindfolds you and takes you somewhere and takes you to a restaurant you don't know. How would you like that?
That would be pretty nice, actually.
Okay.
I like that.
All right. As long as she brings you back, right? You know, yeah, you're okay, right? Okay. Excellent. And then the backyard and the projection on the TV. Give me some other ones, other fun things that, you know, maybe people have never even heard about. Some of the unusual kind of fun things.
Yeah. So some of my creative date ideas, like for the artsy, let's do some artsy type date ideas. So something fun that I think is fun, you put out, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie The Princess Diaries. It's kind of a chick flick teen
movie. Wait a minute. Reggie, you saw it? Okay. Reggie's nodding and smiling. So tell us about
that. She's like, yeah, I've seen that.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So one of my ideas I get from that is she has this, she does like balloon painting. And I'm sure some people have seen this, but you put out a big, huge poster board. You fill a bunch of balloons with different colored paints from the craft store. You tack them all to the paint board, and then you take darts and you throw them at the balloons, and you paint, and you're creating.
Okay.
You're creating.
you don't throw it at your spouse, right? Just at the balloons.
No, for sure, yeah.
Okay.
There is, however, I have a friend who recently videoed, they're popping up all over the place. Maybe you guys have one in L.A., that they can go to the studio and they're put in a room together and they have a canvas and they throw paint around. So you're throwing paint at your spouse.
Oh, okay. That could be fun.
you're creating a masterpiece together. Some art.
That's pretty good.
You can paint it in your home.
If it comes off, you're okay. But if not, you know, it could be tricky.
Yeah, you got to wear clothes that you don't care about.
Oh.
Some other ones you talked about, you have couples do improv together. I don't know. We love to go to like improv clubs or comedy shows. That's something a little bit different than your normal date night or dinner in a movie date night. We've loved to go, if you go find like an empty parking lot or like an overlook somewhere that's got a mountain. We have lots of mountains here in Utah. And so there's all these hills we can go to, and they've got little parking spots up there. You can watch the sunset and overlook like the city lights. And then going back to those songs, we turn on some of our favorite songs. And you can dance together in the parking lot.
Wow. You know, that's kind of like leading, you know, lovemaking is not just in the bedroom. It begins, you know, at anywhere, you know, like being together, spending time conversing. And, you know, sometimes couples lose the, you know, the sexual intimacy part later in the marriage because they don't have that communication or that connection. What's your advice for couples to keep that spark alive, you know, the sexual and romantic chemistry?
Yeah, just for the chemistry. And I think it comes back to this, making your marriage a priority every day. Find some way to date your spouse. Remember why you loved your spouse. Those mini dates and dating each other and continuing to have those conversations. There's all sorts of resources out there that have conversation starters. And I think it's fun that I think no matter how long you've been married, there's always something new that you can learn about your spouse.
Hmm.
So couples think, well, I've been married to them for 50 years. I know everything there is to know, right?
Amberly, you sound like this is a sweet and positive person. I'm kind of wondering, what made you get into this? Did you go through any kind of pain or even failure in life and relationships? Or what kind of turned you around to devote your life to helping married couples? What happened in your personal life?
I wouldn't say that there's anything that like I've really struggled. I mean, my husband and I have obviously had our trials. We've had our struggles. We've had our moments that we've had to work through and things in our marriage that we've had to work to make it work. But I wouldn't say there's anything necessarily
What was the most difficult adjustment you had to make with your husband or issue to overcome?
Oh, that's a hard one. Maybe I would, there's a few. I would definitely say baby number two was a hard one for us.
Okay.
So that's been our biggest.
Was he jealous or of the time you spent with the baby, or was there something that came up about that?
No, I think just two. We have two kids. They're six 16 months apart. So they're very young, very close together. So it's like having two babies around the house. So we're always tired. We were both working. We were working long hours. So it's kind of a combination of all those life situations. And then that big life change for us was baby number two. And our baby was in the NICU for 3 weeks. And so that was something we had to work on. But those 3 weeks were a time like we never saw each other. And so we had to really work to make that a priority and make our relationship a priority, even though obviously our top priority had to be our kids at that time in our life. And so,
what made you, I mean, what drives you to do this? Because everyone has a, like an inner passion or something that drives them when they try to help people at a high level. My experience was, you know, I was a shy introvert kind of person, you know, and I always wanted to understand myself and connect with people. And I was very literary and I love to read. What is it about you? I mean, is there something that drove you to put marriage at such a high standard, you know, and something in your life that helped you do that?
Yeah, I've always just felt family is really important. As a teenager, I was kind of like that. I would call myself that hopeless romantic. And I was all the love songs, all that kind of stuff. So it's always been something I've been interested in. And then when I went to college, I didn't know what I was going to do. And I had a couple of generals that were in the family studies department and dealt with that family and child life education side of things. And I just really loved them. And I just found like the dynamic of family is really interesting and unique and how it all works together. And it's just something that I really loved. It's just a topic that really fascinated me. So
let's say that we have right now listening to the podcast, struggling couples. Maybe they're married. Maybe they're living together. They have kids. And they're fighting, you know, sometimes it's emotional conflicts. There's maybe not domestic violence, but that unfortunately happens. But let's say they love each other, but they want to make it work, but they're really having a struggle. What is your biggest piece of advice? Give me like a couple of phrases or something you can tell them to give them some hope, some inspiration.
Yeah. My first advice always is I think that professional counseling and help is so good because it gives you that outside of perspective. But from the inside of your marriage, things that you can do yourself, I think looking back to what made you fall in love with your spouse, fall in love with your partner, what made you fall in love with each other, and starting to recognize those things and trying to find the positive things in your relationship, because I think a lot of times when you're struggling, all you see is the negative. What are the positive sides of your relationship? And then finding those ways, like we've talked about, to bring the romance back to your relationship. Just doing those little things like dating each other daily or sending little texts, flirting, trying to, you know, all those little things that got your relationship going in the beginning. If you can bring that back, sometimes that'll help a lot to reignite the spark and the flame.
So I like that. What made you fall in love? So maybe you should have that written up somewhere and put in the house, right? Like a little billboard or something.
That's a great idea.
Why do you love your partner? Well, you know, what made you fall in love? And do you believe in like leaving little love notes around the house and stuff like that, and little cards and presents and stuff?
Yeah, for sure. I think that's great. And a lot of people, love notes speak to them. And I think, even if it's like a love note, but just taking that time every single day to let your spouse know something you appreciate about them, tell your partner what you love about them, verbalize those things, whether it's through a love note, whether it's through a text to them, whether you're telling them face to face. And I think that starts to heal things as well.
Yeah, so I think two things. Why did you fall in love? And also, why should you stay in love? You know, what are the benefits? Uh-huh. You know, that's another question that's important to ask. We talked about the psychological, physical benefits, you know, I guess even economic. You know, people that have two incomes, you know, can do better financially. They can have a better life for their children. And, of course, you know, keeping the marriages intact, research shows, actually helps children more likely than not psychologically.
Yes.
And divorce does hurt children to a certain extent, unless there's a lot of domestic violence and other factors as well, which is another issue. And of course, you know, the love that they have, you know, that's the biggest issue. The love can really create an amazing life for both of them. You know, if they can maintain that love, you know, through the end of their life. And that's important. And do you believe in love, Amberly?
I do, for sure.
Okay. Why is it important, love for you in your life?
For me personally, the love that I share with my spouse, it's that connection. I love having that connection with other people. I'm a people person, and so having that one person that's my person, going through all the struggles together, one of the things, I mean, I had my idea of love when I first got married, and then as we've had kids and bought a house and gone through all these life changes together, I've realized that love love is so much more than that. We share the happiness, we share the sorrows, we share everything, and that has bonded us deeper. And I just, I guess I love knowing that I have that person that I love that, you know, for the rest of our lives, that we're going to be there for each other, and that we are a team and we're a partnership, and we're there to see each other through good and bad. And I don't know, everything that that encompasses.
That's beautiful. I don't know who's crying more, you or Reggie, my engineer. Reggie? You feel it. No, it's very sensitive. I like that. So it's a really heartfelt expression, right, you're saying, of love. Uh-huh. Something that really makes a difference in your life. And Amber, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. And I don't know if you ever come out to LA, maybe you and I can collaborate on a workshop for couples.
Yeah, that'd be
fun. If you're interested in doing that. I mean, there are many ways to help people. And I think you've done that before, right? You've worked, you collaborated on workshops for couples.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It's been a lot of fun.
Okay. And you want to do that as well in the future. So you do coaching, I understand. And is there anything you're excited about now? Any products you have or things you're doing to help people that you want to talk about?
Yeah, I'm just really excited. I've just got a lot of things in store. I just quit my full-time job. And so this is what
wow.
I'm trying to
okay. That's a full investment. My goodness.
Yeah.
Is it kind of scary to quit your full-time job, or do you feel a passion for it?
No, it's a little scary, but it was a good choice, and I'm just really excited, and I've got a lot of ideas coming in, just lots of fun posts, and then maybe another ebook or maybe an actual physical book here in the next year or so.
That would be awesome. So. And where can people get a hold of you and learn more about you?
Yeah, so my website is aprioritizedmarriage.com, and then I'm on Instagram and Facebook at A Prioritized Marriage as well, and so I'm active a lot on Instagram.
Now you're like me. You speak pretty fast, so can you slow down and tell me the website, maybe even spell it out if you can.
Yeah, for sure. So it's aprioritizedmarriage.com.
A with the letter A, right?
A? Yeah, APRIOZITIZED, and then marriage. I have to think that through. Did I spell that right?
Wait a minute. Let's try that again. Okay. Prioritize. Is it APRIORITIZED? Prioritized.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes, correct.
And then the word marriage.
Yep.
.com. Okay, there you go. So that's not too difficult, right, Reggie? We got that. And it's been great having you on the show, Amberly. Now, if anyone wants to call in and send us emails or about the show or they want to be a guest, they can reach us at loveuniversity.love. Also, lovetype4u@aol.com. That's LOVETYPE, the number 4, letter U, at AOL.com. Or call us at 310-226-8090. We love your feedback on Amberly and our other guests. And if anyone wants to actually be a guest on our show and has a real-world situation, we'd love to hear from you. And there's a lot of stuff out there that people want to hear about. So, Amberly, again, it's been a pleasure. And much love to you and your family and your spouse. And can I call you Amberlita? Or is that the word? Is that the way they call you these days? Amberlita?
Yeah, go for it.
All right. So for all our Spanish audience, well, have a wonderful day, Amberly. Thanks again. And this is Love University.
You as well.
And we're now in recess. So everyone put away your books and pens, and we'll see you next time.